You are listening to Community Radio KGNU, and it is time for another instalment in our monthly radio book club. I'm Maeve Conran. My co-host, as always, Arsen Kashkashian, head buyer with the Boulder Bookstore, joining me in the studio. Yet another wonderful selection this month, Arsen.
Well, I'm really excited about this selection. This is Perfume River by Robert Owen Butler, and I've been reading Robert Owen Butler for well over 20 years now, I think. So to get him in the studio with us and be able to talk about this book is really a thrill for me, and I hope for our listeners.
Robert, it's great to have you in the studio.
I am delighted to be here.
Well, Arsen, why did you select this? I know you're a huge fan of Robert's work, but what was it about this particular book?
Well, you know, I think the book that made the biggest impact on me that he's written is Good Scent from a Strange Mountain, which was written many years ago about Vietnamese refugees in Louisiana, and it won the Pulitzer Prize. And it was an amazing book of short stories. He's done a lot of other things, and he's talked about Vietnam and many other books. But lately he's been writing kind of a mystery series. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that he had another book kind of addressing Vietnam, I thought, well, this would be a great book to get him into the studio for. And so that's why I wanted to do that. Not that everything he's done I've really enjoyed, but I thought this would really be on point and something that as a community radio station and what KGNU people listen to, I thought it would be an interesting conversation.
Well, there were so many themes that just jumped out at me in this book. Family relationships, the parent, the child. What happens when you have based your whole identity on what premise and you find out that that's actually wrong? And so we're going to get into all of that, but we'll let you throw it open out to Robert Arsen.
Yeah, well, I wanted, you know, this book is really about a family that was torn apart in the 60s at the time of the war. One brother, Robert, goes to the war, and the other brother, Jimmy, goes to Canada. And you pick up the action in 2015, and this family has not reconciled. So I guess, what gave you the idea for that? What, you know, what was the impetus for this book and how these people relate to each other?
Well, in some ways, I think I've been writing this book for 60 of my 71 years. The impetus was seeing a homeless man in a food co-op trying to have dinner. That seems so small, but there were, it began to pull together all the elements that had been stirring around. Graham Greene once said that all good novelists have bad memories. He says, what you remember comes out as journalism, what you forget goes into the compost of the imagination. And so much of my life and experiences and what I know about the human condition out of that compost heap is in the book, which is not to say that it's autobiographical. Indeed, he's obviously talking about life experience, but in that regard, you know, to the point where I put things in because I know them to be real, to that extent my process fails. So it's a work of the imagination that came out of the long accumulation of a lot of experience. Uh-huh. And, you know, we can get into what some of those experiences were autobiographically, but the impetus was just a dinner in a food co-op.
And that's how the book opens.
Yes.
The book meets a homeless man, Bob, and he buys him a dinner. And he mistakes at first, briefly, Bob as perhaps a Vietnam veteran, but then he realizes Bob is too young to be a Vietnam veteran, but that gets his mind going about his experience in the war and what happened between him and his brother.
It does, and indeed, the getting the mind going is a very central activity in this book. In a way, the book is also about, or one of the main features of it, is the way in which, and I think it's deeply true of us as human beings, the past and the present are always in dialogue. That and what the book does technically is weave the past and the present together. The ways in which every moment we live in the present is shaped consciously or unconsciously by all the accumulated moments in the past. And as Maeve mentioned, there's even the past it comes out of a brief moment where the book's also about the frailty of language and gesture and all the communicative powers of human beings are so fragile that something can be intended to be said or conveyed and quite something else is understood, and a life and decades of otherwise intimate relationships can persist with that fundamental misunderstanding.
I love the communication or lack of communication, or maybe lack of verbal communication, mm-hmm. between the Quinlan family. That's the family that we're talking about here, the father, the mother, the two sons, one of whom had gone to Canada. And maybe it was because they were an Irish family that I recognised so much of that. You don't talk about your emotions, and so much is on gesture or very sparse conversations.
Indeed.
Because as much as people say Irish people like to talk, not about that, not about your feelings.
Yeah, and especially the men. That's so true. The father, William, is a World War II veteran, and Robert, indeed, makes that choice that you mentioned, that of going to Vietnam in order to try to win the love and respect of his father. And not that he has done it, even at age 70 in the book.
He thinks he's done to some extent what his father wanted. That if there's one thing he believes that his father is proud of, it's that he went to war while his brother Jimmy went to Canada. And not only did he go to Canada, he's never spoken to the family again. He's completely gone. But there's a passage in here, and maybe now's the right time to lead up to it, where Robert, you talk about communication, where Robert finds out that perhaps what he thinks he's always believed about his father is wrong. And yeah. And so he I guess this is led up to, there's a scene where he remembers being in a bar with his father before he went to Vietnam, and his father crying, you know, having some, and he believes that he's crying because he's so proud of him that, yes, he's going to Vietnam.
Yes.
And now William, the father, is on the deathbed, and I thought maybe you could read this.
Sure, the passage here.
Yeah.
Two men sharing what they did, what they are. That, Robert finds his voice now. Pops, it's okay for both of us. We had to go to war. You and I did what we could. And this turns Pop's face back to him. They look at each other. Robert waits. William struggles with something. Then he says, I've held this inside for a long time. He pauses. Robert quickens. And William says, I lost one son utterly. Jimmy. Robert regrets that it has to be in contrast to his brother, but he longs for what's next so much that he puts this regret aside. He even draws a good breath now at how Jimmy has made him even more important to his father. And William says, so far I've held my tongue, but the truth is you didn't go to war. You went through the motions, but you turned it into graduate school. You contrived a comfortable place on the edge of the action to go study. You didn't even let the army decide your fate. You wangled your safe little job with a pre-enlistment deal and avoided the real thing. You told all the others who manned up, better you do the dirty work, not me. Better your blood than mine. Robert falls back in his chair in enervated stillness. He would rise. He would go. But he remains. His father says, and look where you put me. What could I have said to you? How could I argue for my son to risk death? How could I do that to your mother? And what would it say about you that I should have to talk you into it? You already chose.
Whew. What a powerful passage. I mean, there's no satisfying his father, you know.
No,
there's
no.
And he's believed, he's had this mistaken vision of his relationship with his father for all these years.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's, you think that, you know, that generation between the guys who fought in World War II and the Vietnam generation, it seems like a bridge that was never quite, a divide that was never quite bridged in some ways in America.
Yeah, that's true. And by the way, the secrets that men keep in this book, Robert has a secret. I mean, this was the thing the father never said to him. Robert has a secret, too, about something that happened near the Perfume River in Hue, the old ancient capital, during the Tet Offensive. And it's a thing he has told no one. And it gets very complex. I'm not going to say too much about it, except that William is also carrying another secret, one from his World War II experience. And and everything I've talked about, the ways in which the past and the present influence each other, oftentimes to utterly deceive both parties as to what the reality is between them and for themselves. But also, the ways in which these things never die and ultimately can perhaps never emerge. Yeah.
The fact that Robert had placed his entire belief system almost on this false belief, it turned out, that his father was proud of him for going to war, and basically on his father's deathbed, his father said, no, nothing of the sort. I mean, it makes him question his entire life in many ways. It makes him question, I think, his relationship with his mother, and really kind of opens a can of worms. And I think that has happened to a lot of people, not obviously, you know, with the war component, but was that something you either personally experienced or knew someone who found something out? You know, you have such, you know, a concept of your own identity or your whole life based on something that maybe happened in childhood or as a young adult. And then years later, you find that's not what happened at all. It makes you question everything.
Well, you asked if it's something happened to me that way or I knew someone. I don't remember. And I will refer you back to Graham Greene on that matter. Okay. If I can command the moment here, because I think the deeper thing and the reason something like this can emerge out of the compost heap, never having had not only not exact, but even vaguely like experiences, or it gets down to the deeper connections of things, is that fiction, all narrative, but fiction is the art form of human yearning. It's the thing that drives. Plot is simply yearning, challenged and thwarted. And I preach this in my creative writing courses. And I think I've come to an understanding in the last few years just that that there might be a unified field theory of yearning, that in all literature, great literature, that at the deepest level, the yearning in the main characters is I yearn for a self. I yearn for an identity. I yearn for place in the universe. And by the way, that's the connection between A Good Scent from a Strange Mountain in this book, the way in which it is the aesthetic descendant is, in spite of, you know, so many years and so many miles separating those two books, that all the characters in Good Scent, every one of them, Vietnamese exile, living in southern Louisiana, what they knew of who they were was shaped in Vietnam, and then they're exiled into a foreign country, utterly, and they have to reinvent themselves. The characters in Perfume River, it's the same. Every character here, in some way or another, has been shaped by Vietnam, and indeed, by extension, other wars as well in the book. And now the main characters are exiled into another country, that country being incipient old age and intimations of mortality. And they, too, are having to reevaluate who they are. So in a world in which, and in a creative process in which I am following everything, the center of gravity are the yearnings of the characters and the yearning for self, the kind of turn in the plot that we just have discussed, where he felt for all his life that, well, I know who I am, at least in relationship to the man who means the most to me, and then he doesn't. You can see how that would evolve in the creation of this book, with absolute internal necessity, needing no comparable event in my own past.
We're speaking with Robert Olin Butler today on KGNU. It's our monthly radio book club. I'm Maeve Conran, and Arsene Kashkashian with the Boulder Bookstore is joining me, as always, my co-host in our radio book club. The latest novel by Robert Olin Butler is Perfume River, and it's the book we've been reading this month.
One character I want to talk to you a little bit more about is Bob, the homeless man from the beginning, because he's not just at the beginning. He's threaded throughout, and he's kind of a counterpoint to this family. And I guess, you know, it's what's going on in the family is so rich with drama and emotion and feelings. And yet you have this counterpoint going on. Bob, I guess, you know, what were your thoughts of how Bob was going to influence the story as it went on? And why do you think he was necessary, that you needed him in there?
Well, first of all, they weren't thoughts. One thing I teach my creative writers in terms of their process, they aspire to write art, is that art doesn't come from the mind. It doesn't come from thoughts. It doesn't come from ideas. It comes from the place where you dream. But Bob, you know, the book in a larger way, you know, there are a number of, there are three couples in this book and secondary characters, the grandson eventually has a similar, is heading in the world of Isis to a similar life of malehood, maleness and war. The book on a much deeper level too, in connected to people's search for an identity, is about the way about war and about the legacies of war and about the secrets kept in war and about communication. Well, Bob, as you know, his story resonates into all of that. He is the dark doppelganger of Robert. He too yearned for the love of his father. And that father, not a World War II veteran, but indeed a Vietnam veteran. Bob, as Robert finally figures out, even before he leaves that co-op that night, is that as old as he is, 50, 55 years old maybe, Bob, he was too young to be in Vietnam, so he can't be a Vietnam veteran. But he has been as profoundly affected by Vietnam as anyone in the book, and in a parallel way to Robert. So, you know, Bob, and then Bob indeed feels a connection to Robert in a way and seeks him out. And, you know, there's some, as one of the pre-publication book reviewers said, there's a backbeat of suspense in this book. And by the way, those three books I wrote just before this in 3 years of historical espionage thriller genres, they were a workout in the gym. I mean, I worked as well. I mean, I love these books on their own right, but I worked on certain muscle groups in that gym. Muscles I had, but which got refined and honed. And that backbeat of suspense in this book, I think, is enhanced by my having written those books. But Bob ultimately then is playing out his own dark drama with the same yearnings and relationships that Robert does. And both stories come together, certainly, toward the end.
Yeah, I mean, there is that suspense element. We haven't talked about that. Mm. And you're kind of at the edge of your seat, especially in the second half. But I think much of the book, you know, because you've got, you said there's several couples. One of them is Jimmy and his wife, Linda, up in Canada. And what you do, what I find so satisfying in this book as a reader is that it seems almost effortless, and I know it's not, but it seems.
No, it's not.
But how you're going between, you know, so many different characters. You know, you get into their heads, and you kind of almost like a dance. You know, now we're in Canada. Now we're in Bob's head. Now we're with Robert and Darla. Now we're with William. You know, and you move around so much.
And they all end up in the same ballroom.
Right.
You know, the last 13,000 words of the book are this one long scene.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I went back and watched The Big Chill a couple of times. Remember that movie?
Yeah, of course.
Just, you know, obviously I didn't take anything from it, but I remember that, you know, the way that kind of, the montaging of that. Because I even preach this in my creative writing course. There's a lot of similarity. In fact, D.W. Griffith, who is credited with inventing modern film technique, himself credited one man with everything he knows about film. And the guy he credits is Charles Dickens, who died decades before film was invented. And it's indeed true that everything we think of as film technique, there is absolute equivalence of it in fiction. So that, you know, that played a big part in the way all that came together.
Yeah,
I just answered a question you never even asked, Arson. Well, I hope that's all right.
I think it was perfect because I didn't, I, you know, sometimes I throw these things out there, yeah. and I don't really have a question, but I wanted you to talk about the dance of the narrative.
Well, we did well.
And
then.
That's what you did. Yeah, you talked about the dance of the narrative, and that's what it feels like.
The dance of the interviewer here. Yeah, that's right.
Well, the opening scene, as we referred to earlier, is Bob, who is the homeless man who has been, in many ways, the most damaged person in the novel from the Vietnam War, albeit he's the one who wasn't actually in war. His father was. But he's...
Yeah. By the way, you just put your finger on another reason Bob is there. Because his story contains that very insight. That it, you know, war's effects are way beyond the battlefield. Way beyond, indeed. And I think this fact is mentioned in the book somewhere in some context. But fewer than 20%. And this is true of all wars. Fewer than 20% of the people who go to war ever see combat in a classic way. There's the effects of war are far broader. And the Vietnam War especially, because there were no front lines. And so the 80% were there. And then everyone back in the United States watching the war, for us, the effects were not so much about our insight into man's humanity to man, or, you know, the horrors of battle. It was the collision of cultures. The Vietnam War cracked our melting pot. That we as Americans, we were forced to reassess who is our own and who is the other, which is how we all individually, in that unified field theory, yearn for a self and try to define it. And I think the Vietnam War's legacy was seen is seen every night now on the political news, on the television.
But that's not really ever put in that context, though. And I mean, it's so vivid in the book.
Yes, yes.
Because of the character of Bob and how he is so profoundly damaged because yep. of his father's experience. And yet we don't really talk about that in society, particularly in the context of Vietnam, how the children of those veterans have also been impacted, and maybe then generational trauma, and how maybe we have a whole other generation of people being traumatized. It's obviously something that you're observing yourself and have thought about.
Indeed, absolutely. That's a good way to put it.
Well, Bob, the opening scene is Bob, the homeless guy, is having dinner at a co-op, and Robert observes him. You said this whole book was, you know, triggered by your own personal experience of that. Did you approach that homeless man that
sure
you saw?
I bought him dinner.
You bought him
absolutely.
Dinner?
And honestly, since I realized how important he was to me, I've gone back a number of times to that co-op at various hours, just kind of expecting they might be there to see him again, and I never have. Maybe he never existed. I don't know.
But
he was just sent by the book gods to me for that one night, and he's off helping somebody else.
The muse. But do you have that experience after when you see, I mean, unfortunately, one of the legacies of the Vietnam War is homeless veterans. I mean, when you see a homeless person on the street who either says they're a Vietnam vet or seems to be of that generation, do you feel something, being a vet yourself, that you need to go over and engage or help or somehow interact?
I don't have a special extra thing. As Bob says, I would have done this. I mean, Robert says it, you know, he feels he would have done this anyway, and probably so, but it had an extra connectedness to it. And Robert makes an effort, even after he realizes the man's not a Vietnam veteran, to try to make it more than just an act of blatant charity, you know, kind of condescending thing. And indeed, his attempts to become more connected actually in some ways can be seen as propelling, as inciting in a kind of deep subtextual way the way that the book heads in that suspenseful way. So once again, we even our best efforts to communicate one thing often can end up in quite a different effect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bob is haunted by his father. And so even though Robert is doing him a good turn and he struggles in his mind, Bob, but he does kind of bring together his father and Robert at times.
Yeah.
And that's very difficult. He's triggering, Bob is being triggered in a way that he might not have otherwise if Robert never had approached him.
Absolutely.
And yeah, sometimes your best intentions turn out bad. And I think that's very interesting. One thing I wanted to ask you was, in the Canadian relationship, Jimmy and his wife Linda, they have an open marriage. And what happens in this book at some point is that stops working after all those years.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, what you've written in other books a lot on sex and relationships and things. And I just wonder what your take on that was and how that factored, you know.
I don't have a take on it independent of the book. My take on it, I would go back to the ways in which my process was always in at work in the creation of it, that they too, in another way, Jimmy and Linda are trying to identify who they are together, who they are apart. The relationships, marriages, our sense of ourselves, going beyond the book, I mean, everything that we think of today, I mean, race, politics, nationality, ethnicity, religion, all of, you know, I mean, all the struggles that we have personally and with the world and with other people and they with us. At the bottom, I mean, Muhammad Atta flying that jet into the World Trade Center. It was an act of yearning for an identity. I mean, this is who I am. I am this great martyr. I'm off to heaven, you know, a beloved son of God. Donald Trump. I mean, did the Pope said something about me. Was it good or was it bad? It was not so good. Well, then I don't like him. I mean, he is naked. Who am I? If you like me, I'm okay. Then I like you. And then that, you know, that reinforces that. I mean, it is present in everything that we do. And so, you know, that Linda and Jimmy, I entered into that relationship. And you know, and certainly in my compost heap, I've done a lot of living in my 71 years, and I've, you know, of course I've known people and you know, I lived through the 60s and you know, there is always people around me and in myself. I've been married 5 times, so I mean, you know, this, which only shows you my, unlike them, it shows you my instinct to commitment. That's what that demonstrates, you know. People I should have lived with, only, you know, I didn't. But so, you know, all of that certainly comes in, mm-hmm. It's down there in the compost. But always the heartbeat is self.
Well, Robert Olin Butler is the author of Perfume River. And there's so much more to talk about. And we invite listeners to check out our podcast After Hours at the Book Club. Find it on iTunes. Do a search for Boulder Bookstore or KGNU, because we're going to talk a lot more about the writing process and so much more. But we would really like to thank our guest this month in the Radio Book Club, Robert Olin Butler. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight.
As we always do at the end of our book club segment, we announce our next book. Now, Geraldine Brooks is
an
amazing author. I'm very excited. She's coming to town and will join us in the book club in October. Yep. What's her latest book?
Well, Geraldine Brooks' latest book is The Secret Chord, and that's a reconsideration of the story of King David. So we're going to do something a little different. And she's going to be at the Boulder Public Library on Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. So you want to pick up the book, you can see her speak, and then you can join us on the book club later in the month.
And Geraldine Brooks will join us on Thursday, October 27th at 9 a.m. You can find out more details about that and listen to archives of the Radio Book Club at our website, news.kgnu.org, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.